Hey guys, what is up? So I'm here with my friend Lauren, and we wanted to go over an important topic today, and that is the letter from Birmingham Jail written by Martin Luther King Jr. Nobody really knew much about this letter, and it was never really talked about. Kind of give a background of the letter. It was written in 1963, which is during the time of the Civil Rights Movement. So this would include like the bus boycotts that have happened with Rosa Parks and segregation against schools, and this started the case of Brown versus Board of Education. So I had asked my mom the other day about it, and she never like really knew about the letter, so it was just an interesting text to interpret. So Lauren, what is your intake on this?
I think this text is a really powerful text. I think, you know, it's really interesting to see, you know, all the things he has to go through up until this point, you know, and I feel like this is his breaking point. I feel like he was willing to cooperate, meaning Martin Luther King. He was really trying to cooperate with, you know, the police and, you know, other white communities within this one, and really just trying to say, okay, this is what I'm going to do, this is what I need you to do, this is what needs to happen. But, you know, up until this point, I feel like this was his breaking point. And he was like, you know what, if we're going to get things done, this is how we're going to do it. We're not going to use violence, because he was really trying to push nonviolence. But then I just think it's really powerful. And I think it's really interesting that it took him to write this letter to continue to move things forward, instead of he could have easily written this letter as a reflection of himself and then just said, there's not anything else we can do, we have to move on. So back to the thing that I've said the third time, it's really powerful to see that writing this letter has helped him overcome so much injustice and inequality in the world.
I definitely agree with that. So in the letter, Martin Luther King Jr. obviously uses rhetoric, using quotes from the Bible and talking about God, because obviously he's using that to persuade his audience, who are these 8 white clergymen that are in Alabama. And the thing that got to me when doing research on this letter was, not only was he persuading his audience, but he was also persuading himself. And it really caught my eye, because, you know, he wants to put his faith into God as well. So there's this quote here that stood out to me from the letter, which he says, "But more basically, I am in Birmingham because injustice is here. Just as the prophets of the 8th century BC left their villages and carried there, thus saith the Lord, far beyond the boundaries of their hometowns. And just as the Apostle Paul left his village of Tarsus and carried the gospel of Jesus Christ to the far corners of the Greco-Roman world, so I am compelled to carry the gospel of freedom beyond my own hometown. Like Paul, I must constantly respond to the Macedonian call for aid." So that quote kind of just shows that, you know, Martin Luther King Jr. is proving his point as to what he's doing in terms of God. And so as I was doing more research, I dove more into the religious side of it. So in David chapter 3, it talks about how slaves in the antebellum South was related to the Hebrew slaves. And this had much more meaning to it, which was very surprising to me. You wouldn't like really, you know, interpret that while reading a letter. And so Daniel, in this chapter of the Bible, he had to encourage nonviolent resistance in breaking the laws of the land and the moral of God. So Martin Luther King Jr. is also doing the same thing with segregation during the time. So do you have any, you know, interpretation?
You know, that's a really interesting perspective on it, you know, and it's kind of my own perspective. Within my own research, I have looked at James Baldwin. James Baldwin was a very, you know, popular author. He was black, he was gay, you know. Obviously, that put him at a disadvantage in the 1960s at this time. You know, gay rights weren't legal, black rights were barely even legal, you know. So it was hard for me to see, you know, reading James Baldwin and In the Fire Next Time, you know, he writes a letter to his nephew saying, you know, all these things, you know, nonviolent tactics are not going to work. You have to become stronger in order to win. And I think, you know, it's really powerful. as he goes on, you can see his opinion of God starts to change, even though he ran to the church out of fear for his life. So you can see his perspective on God trying to change, but also kind of almost trying to see the same. And the more that I got through James Baldwin, he saw that God was a white guy who wasn't going to help a colored community out of prosperity. And it was just, that's for me hard to see, being religious myself. And so then you flip it over and you take somebody who's very powerful in the same time period, you know, in the 1960s, and you see Martin Luther King at this breaking point, like I said, and he uses his religion to get out of this situation. And so it was just, you take two different people, one not, you know, and I honestly don't know how many people thought the same as James Baldwin, or how many people thought the same as Martin Luther King. Obviously you have that divide, but I just thought it was interesting in my own research to see that within this civil rights movement, and see that one denied God and one leaned on God. And I think that's really interesting. And I think, Shania, that plays into your perspective of it as well.
I definitely agree with that. Especially, like, I mean, segregation itself was just hard to deal with. And another thing, too, I just feel like, knowing that not a lot of people had read this letter, I feel like people should go back and read this letter, you know, especially if they were in this time. So that way, you know, people can have a perspective of why this happened, why Martin Luther King was in jail, like, why things have changed and why things were the way they were. It's just kind of sad to me because, like, I was going, you know, I'm in the sociology's class, and the only way I interpret this letter was in my sociology class because I had to do it. It was an assignment. And it's just kind of sad to, like, not interpret this letter in our history classes because, I mean, then we don't really know much about Black history itself, especially in history classes. So that's just kind of my intake on that, and I just feel like we need to know more information about our history and why things have happened the way it happened.
And I completely agree. Like, it took me, you know, up until sociology to read this letter. I feel like I'd known about this letter. I feel like it was out there. I think I worked with it when I was a junior in high school, and that was in my English class, you know. And then the next time I worked with it was in, you know, sociology last year, like Shania had mentioned. And it was just, it took me to understand the power behind it when I was in sociology. And obviously I used it in my research this year because I was aware of it from last year. And like Shania said, I think it's so sad that this letter exists, but people don't use it. And I really do feel like this letter can relate into the time today.
Yeah, I definitely agree with all the points. So that's the end of our podcast here. I just hope that a lot of people, you know, maybe even read this letter, you know, get our feedback from this podcast and be able to read this letter and interpret things maybe from our perspective. All right.